that's why some people aren't working.
Oh, where's Ryan?
There's Ryan.
Okay, are we ready?
Yep.
This is to call the city council meeting to order for May 2nd, 2022. Piggy, roll call, please.
Don't we know we're here yet?
Hall?
She's been excused.
Here.
She's in the Zoom. Hello. Jacoby?
I just said here.
Kaplan?
Can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear us?
Can you hear us, Sam? Okay. Here's us.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a delay, but I can hear you.
Okay, now I don't know where I ended, but Boteo?
Here.
Goble?
Yes.
And Sawyer?
Here. Would you all please join me with the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, the republic for which it stands.
One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, it's cold in here tonight. I hope you don't mind, I'm wearing my jacket. We have a problem with the HVAC system and they're working on it, and it's not going to be fixed tonight. So we're going to probably have a quick cold meeting. Okay, Peggy?
The next item on the agenda is public comment. And there's the only people who want to make public comment are those whose slips that you have. There was nothing in the email.
Okay, I'm going to start off with Gina McCray.
Right. Thank you, everybody. Good evening. Can't say I'm really happy to be here, and you guys might not be so happy to see me here either, because I was just here a couple weeks ago. In fact, I'm kind of still frustrated as to what happened last meeting, so I wanted to show up today and just clarify a couple things, because I really sincerely believe that misinformation does not help us make good decisions. So after I said my piece, I sat back down. There were some comments that were made, and I want to clarify these because there is going to be a LUBA appeal. There's other decisions that need to be made. So I want these things clarified so that people can make decisions as they go forward. So there was a comment made that other shelters are at airports such as Salem, and they had the National Guard there, and there's, you know, helicopters that run there. So that's not true. I'm familiar with Salem. I called them just to make sure they didn't just build a shelter there. They do not have an animal shelter at the Salem Airport. They have one that is like, I don't even know, a mile or so away, not in the visual flight pattern. To get there, you would have to climb over trees, other buildings, all kinds of things to get there. They are not in the flight pattern. They are not really at risk any more than any other plane would be at risk of being hit. They do have helicopters there. I asked the individual I spoke with, how far as the crow flies is the helicopter to that shelter? He said it's at least 2 miles. So again, it is not an issue. This is not apples to apples, and I keep hearing that. I keep hearing this. It's just like Portland, we have this. It's just like Salem, it is not. They do not have shelters at the airport. They do not have problems. They are not doing what we are trying to do here with ours. There was a comment made that the Coast Guard did not take up from that spot. I have video. Several videos, day and night, of showing those Coast Guard launching directly from their site. They are not taking them out to the runway, at least not the times I've been out there or videotaping them. Maybe they are lately. I haven't been out there lately. But I have video that shows they take off from that site, they fly over there where the shelter is going to be, and then they return that way. There was a comment made that there's going to be hangars built there that are going to somehow protect the landing or a plane landing on that shelter. I didn't understand that, so if there's some clarification, that would be great, and I will go back and do my due diligence. I don't see how we would put hangars. I know there's new hangars going out there at that runway, and then somehow think that's not going to cause a problem. But then you also have to keep in mind the planes, when they come into approach, there's not going to be anything that protects when they come over those trees. They drop down. They try and get to that airport. So, again, that's misleading. It's misleading when we say that we talk about focus on things like jet traffic and how it's worse than saying all that. We aren't even talking about jets. We're talking about the smaller planes that tend to have stall accidents and those things at the end of the runway. And we talk about Salem just real quickly. They actually, back in January, had two people die at the landing short of their runway. Experienced pilot on a clear day crashed and died, killed himself and the passenger at the end of the runway. So it looks like my time is almost up. That's it. I'm just going to keep coming back and clarifying these things until we get through this loop uphill. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, next is Robin Wright.
Is that okay?
Yeah, they've got two people together, Dean.
Okay, you're just, Jody?
It's
yeah.
Jody
okay.
And Robin.
So Jody Millett and Robin Wright.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me take some.
Word Pair Expressions, 357 Southwest 10th Street.
Adjacent to the Herbert and 10th Street Deco District parking lot.
Thank you.
A designated area for three overnight camp spots that's supposed to come in at a certain time and go out.
Can you do me a favor and direct the mic? Yeah. No, I think it's on, so speak directly into that.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. It's the one that's where they made the three spots to where you come in and you're supposed to leave, but this is what's happened. Okay, go ahead.
Well, there is new signs recently the city put up permitting homeless individuals overnight, but the signs state this space only, and there's three, all items must be stored in vehicles subject to provisions of the Newport Municipal Code. As you can see, none of that's happening. They're not in designated spots, and they are definitely don't put their stuff away. We've had to call numerous times for fights, dogs barking, garbage. We've been broken into. We can go on and on and on. But as business owners, we pay extra for the Deco District parking lot. And it's a huge, huge area in Newport, in our neighborhood, that all pay extra for the parking lot. None of our clients park there. I don't think tourists park there anymore because it's taken over by the homeless people. I know it's a problem, but it was designated, and then nobody's looked at it again. Our business has to look at it. There's other businesses here with us. They have to deal with it. I talked to the mayor twice. I've talked to Jason Malloy, the chief. Dean said to me last week, I drove by and there was only one vehicle there. Well, as you can see, that was just a weird day because it's full every day. We're not sure. I know you're designating different areas in town, but I surely hope this doesn't happen everywhere in town if it's not regulated.
And we call and she comes straight down. You'll see those rigs with yellow slips. She comes, Jovita comes down, and she does go down there and do that. They're back, so it's like putting the buck on someone else, and there's tons of them, and they don't leave. She gets them out, and they're back the next day, or they went somewhere else, and then they're back, and they bring friends. That's all the cars that's pulling in with them.
But so we just ask that you designated it, and I know, again, that you're trying to do an equation throughout the city, off the highway, blah, 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 but we want it to be regulated, have rules. I heard Jason Malloy saying they're trying to make it 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. But anyways, just please address it again. I know you're not going to move it throughout the city, but we just ask. It's affecting our businesses. Nobody else realizes if they're not in our neighborhood.
It's actually scary. I have lived here my whole life, and I walked my lady across the road.
We work late every night and have to walk outside with our clients, or we lock ourselves in
the shop.
And we've been there 25 years. And anyways, we can only foresee it getting worse, not better. So we're just asking.
Like if you drive down there right now, there is a black scary motorhome. There's one next to it. They have all their friends parked there. Their cooler's out. then you have two vans and a guy's been coming in. They just, it's their camping.
There's a restroom and a porta potty and they don't use either one of them. And that's known from Jovita. They go in the parking lot. So it's not just a nice place for someone to lay their head. It's become much more than what it was supposed to be.
And I've even went over and said, look, I've got a text from fishermen. They're looking for people to work. Because I want it, like, hey, oh, it don't work that way. We're fine. We're fine. I said, no, Elizabeth's looking for someone to clean the white railing, the moss off. Nope. So we're like, oh, okay.
And there's a couple pictures. I don't know if you're all actually looking at all the pictures. They're kind of offensive and so on. I'm not trying to be blunt about it, but we're offended too. We don't want to see that every day. And our clients don't want to see that.
An actual new woman clients, naked anyone. Sitting there.
So anyways, it's our livelihood. We survived the pandemic. We just feel like we're slipping away from.
And it's scary.
Controlling this.
I have people that's lived here their whole life and she's like, I parked over there. I said, oh no. So I walked her over and she looked at him and she goes, what is wrong with you? And I'm like, oh no, don't make contact. Just go straight and get in your car and get out of here. That's how scary it is now.
I also have a question. I know that you did the equation or you're still trying to do like city ordinances for this. Is that carved in stone or is that open for discussion?
We're still working on that.
Because I saw in the paper, but I couldn't really tell the colors of the diagram. Is the community involved in it or can we be part of it?
Yes.
Of designating yes. the, That's so right. How do we do that?
Yeah, so from the standpoint of the code that you're referring to, mm-hmm. we did have a meeting with the city council on that. They did ask that we take a look at some other items. We'll be preparing that for a follow-up meeting with the council probably in a month from now. But no, if you have any specific input in that process, you're certainly welcome to.
I listened to the working that, so. Meeting last week also, and again, you kept saying like comparing Coos Bay, McMinnville, and all that stuff, but. Anyways, yes, I have great ideas.
No,
logical stuff, not just move them out, because I know that's not possible. Just
yeah,
to say,
I would say if you have some specific thoughts on it, I'd encourage you to set up a time to meet with me and
for sure. Then yeah, yes,
so that we can sit down and talk okay. about that. So
because, like I said, it's growing, and I know I'm not trying to be rude to homeless people. It's terrible. People are displaced, but. Without guidelines, it's just going crazy. It just,
yep.
And I don't want our city to go to.
It's scary.
Dump.
And that's weird to be somewhere that you're not
yeah,
scared.
Yeah, we're working on that city ordinance to try to give some guidance because as you say, there is no guidance today.
Yeah, and it says rules, sorry to interrupt, but then they're not enforced. So then they just keep taking more and pushing the limits.
And as you and I talked on the phone, I indicated that we're kind of in a box. There's a lot of stuff we can't do now because of court decision and state law.
Mm-hmm.
But we're trying to craft that ordinance to address those issues. Say you can camp here, but you can't camp here.
Yeah.
And of course, cars and vans can only park for 72 hours at one time. And then, you know, obviously I saw in your pictures that they some of those vehicles have been
tagged. And that's not enforced because I know the manpower. I mean, it's tough. It's
yeah. You're right. It's unfortunate because Jovita spends a lot of time on this.
And it's kind of unsafe at times for her to go. She'll have to take an officer with her because she's threatened and stuff. And that's not fun. She doesn't want to go every day and do that or put herself through it. We understand that too, but.
I even called her one day. I said, you can't come down here. I said, I called, you know, she said, no, I'm coming because I'm going to go mark them all. I said, you can't. He is scary. He's screaming. He's yelling. He's fighting. I went around the back and there's no one he's fighting with, but he's killing him. And I said, you can't come here alone. It's scary. She goes, thank you. She goes, and I called the non-emergency and the guy came and I said, don't come towards us. I don't want them thinking we, you know, to draw attention to us. I said, don't have the cop come over here. I said, just I don't know what he's doing, but he's not right. And I didn't want Jovita to stand there and knock at his trailer and something happened to her. And so they had came later again and marked, and it took another, you know, few days, and then he just moved somewhere else, you know.
One more thing about the Deco District. I said that our city license, there's a certain amount that goes to the Deco District parking, which is that lot, which I understand the restroom was built, et cetera. And Deco District, there was actually a group that was trying to, I'll say, beautify this end of town and do like a walking tour. Anyways, it's not even, it disbanded, I think, many years ago because all of this. But so we pay extra for the parking that nobody can use.
None of us use. And there's like plus.
Hundreds of businesses around that pay for that lot for I'm not really sure what. So. But
yeah, the one thing that we will do, we do have a staff meeting to kind of follow up from the council meeting. And what we'll do is we'll have a portion of time and we'll invite you to come in.
Definitely, I
to
would love,
chat with that.
Yeah, and, I would love that.
And if you can check with Melanie in my office tomorrow,
okay.
We'll let you know when that is and hopefully that'll work with your schedule.
Okay. So. I'll make it work yes. For sure because that would be lovely. And we're not just
thank
trying
you.
To come in, you know, mad, but
and we don't know how
it
to
needs
fix
to
it,
change, yeah.
But that's scary.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, we try to do as best we can to give them a place to camp, to do the porta potty, and have some rules. And if people don't follow the rules, that ruins it for everybody.
Mm-hmm. I know, and I know that's life, but it's just
and in the
we
beginning,
don't want it in our
it
city.
Did work that they came in
no,
and there was people,
yeah, people
that pulled in,
just,
and I was ashamed of myself.
They sleep in their van
like
and leave.
Oh my gosh! But as soon as that, I was like, oh, they left right away when the time was. But that didn't last very long.
Not till the word got out.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you for
thank
your
you
time for us
very
babbling.
Much.
And did you want to get the pictures back?
Oh, yes.
I mean, if you guys don't want to keep
them. I know you spent
actually,
a lot of work
actually,
on them.
I would like to keep the pictures.
Oh, okay.
As part of the public record here.
Okay, and I believe we have some other folks that want to speak on the same issue. Tracy Bearden.
So I work at Canyon Wade Dental, which is just across the street from that same lot.
Can't hear you.
Sorry, I work at Canyon Wade Dental, which is across the street from that same lot, right next door to their salon. And I've worked there for 24 years, and there have been some transient traffic and some drunks, you know, up and down that street over time. But I would say this last year has been the worst I've ever seen. To reiterate some of the things Jody said, you know, that public bathroom is beautiful when it was built. It's unfortunate it's been used to sleep in and to do drugs in. The Catholic Church up there opened their lot for a while to, out of the goodness of their heart, to let homeless stay, and the police were there almost every day. So when it was designated that there would be overnight parking there, we were all a little concerned about it, but were assured that it was going to be regulated. It was going to be only certain hours and a couple nights stay. And in the beginning, that's how it worked. And then it's become a free-for-all since then. In this last year, we all feel for houseless people. You know, anybody can unfortunately be displaced by losing their job, having a fire, a flood, but these are not those people most of the time, unfortunately. And ideally, I'd like to see it go away. I know that's not probably going to happen, so I would like to see it regulated also. I think there's a little bit of an out of sight, out of mind mentality about it, that it's over there. And maybe if it was in the lot next door where the Saturday market is, maybe it'd get more attention. I would like to see them limit the hours so that during our business hours, it can actually be used as the parking lot it was supposed to be. And maybe, I don't know what kind of idea this is, but implementing some type of a permit where they have to check in at City Hall and it's free, but at least you know who's there and how long they're staying and whether they've left or not. And then just hoping that someone will monitor it and not let it get to be the garbage pile that it's become. That's all I'm asking for, is that it can be a safe neighborhood and safe for our patients, and that we don't feel like we have to use the buddy system every time we leave our place of work. So that's all.
Which is your business?
I work at Canyon Way Dental.
The dental place.
Yeah, okay. Just down the hill. Yeah, I think the goal is that we treat everybody with dignity and they treat us with dignity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you would have said 10 years ago we were going to have this problem, I would have said no way. And unfortunately, it's here, it's everywhere, and we have to do the best that we can within the rules of the federal government and the state government as well. We just can't, you know, do things, and we have to treat people with dignity, too, at the end of the day.
Definitely. Yes.
I'll thank Tracy and Brett and Jody and her business partner for coming. I think two things that I've heard today are outside the spirit of our temporary overnight camping ordinance. One, behavior-driven issues. Two, inoperable vehicles weren't initially, from the photos you showed me, a lot of those vehicles aren't roadworthy, and so that needs some staff time, Spencer, to address that issue with the police department. And I will echo that Officer Ballantyne is absolutely a community hero, and look for her in the parade next week, mm-hmm. by the way. Mm-hmm. I look forward to hopefully coming to some reasonable compromise on this initially temporary, non-codified overnight camping program at the 9th and Herbert lot.
You know, I tell everybody it's not easy. If it was easy, we would have an easy job, and we wouldn't get paid.
How much?
We don't get paid anyway. Okay.
When you talk about the stipend, I'm going to direct you over there.
Brett?
Good evening. As mentioned, I'm Brett Hewlett. I'm the dentist in the clinic across the street there. I just wanted to echo some of the thoughts that have been said tonight. Some of the things that I was thinking about, at least temporarily, is it has gotten a little bit concerning for me as a healthcare provider, being in this situation, because as some of you know, I do volunteer for the dental van, and I do believe there's a place for compassion, but at the same time, I think that we need to have to make sure that there's been nudity and there's been a bunch of things that we have patients that come to me, somebody that I'm supposed to be helping along, and come concerned about wanting to even come back. It was just the other day that someone asked me, said, "Hey, you know, I really like coming to your clinic, but I don't know if I can keep coming here." And that's a concern for me as a business owner, because I'm looking at expanding at some point, maybe even selling my business, and it's not as desirable as it once was due to this. I thought that maybe in the meanwhile, while we're trying to come up with other solutions, if we could at least maybe put up a privacy fence along the way, that might at least stop some of the, the nudity that happens, as I mentioned, a lot of using the restroom right in the middle of the parking lot and what have you. It's not a good way to start off your day, walking into that. And then getting some trash cans over there, maybe some of those really large trash cans right in, at least providing a larger opportunity for somebody to throw some of this stuff away. You know, there's a lot of garbage that's blown around, but I would encourage all of you, just it's right around the corner, just drive past it on your way out of there and think that this is what you're looking at and this is where you're providing health care in this environment. That's the window you're staring out, getting ready to provide health care for somebody. So if we could start off, like I said, by just providing some sort of outlet for them to use the garbage cans and to at least have that fence up, so we don't have to be exposed, or my patients don't need to be exposed to that. That would be at least a stepping stone while we're trying to figure out some other solutions. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you very much.
Let me ask you a question before you leave. Would you?
Yeah.
When you're talking about a fence, where are you talking about putting a fence on?
Right
on
along
10th Street?
That's 10th Street, yeah. So you'll see some grass that there is kind of significantly overgrown, which is nice because it kind of catches the trash as it blows towards us. But if we could get some of that, like a true privacy fence, so I'm not talking about a chain link, like a true privacy fence to at least block some of the occurrences, yeah, that happen. It doesn't solve
cyclone
our
cyclone of slats or something like that would work.
Yeah, and it doesn't solve our issues that we're having as far as the losing the parking and things like that. But it at least it might help people feel a little bit safer with a little bit of a barrier and without being without the exposure.
I know that we're working on an ordinance that restricts it from. I mean, you can park from 6 to 8. Dusk, dawn to dusk.
That would work fine for our types of businesses. And our two businesses that are affected by this. If you look at it, or the most, I guess there's an optometrist across the way, but it's almost directly into our parking, like yeah. Almost our lot.
That's something city could do, put a fence up?
Yeah, you sent it back to us for some rework, and we're going to rework it and bring it back to you. But I think the one thing, and I appreciate the constructive suggestions, too, that are coming out tonight. I think we're going to set up a time when we're getting together on this to get some direct public feedback, and we'll let you know when that is, and hopefully some of the folks can participate in that.
When did this change in how this parking lot was being used occur? You know, you have like maybe a month or just kind of when this actually started escalating to where it is right now.
It wasn't long. It was within weeks. And like it was mentioned previously, it was originally done quite respectfully. People were staying in the lines that were designated, the spots that were designated. And it was going as well as I imagine it could. But it was less than a month. That.
So within the past month is what you're saying? It's
oh no,
no, no. I'm just from,
no, no, no. Yeah, it's as but I mean.
Oh, so after a month of the program,
after
being
a month of the
so
program,
so it's been going out for how many? What over a year then? Probably at least. Okay.
Beatrice,
I have a question. Do they have like a design line where people can see where they can park and there are designed those
That's very, very
parking
clear.
Lots very and everything? And also, I have a question. Have you seen families with children there?
I don't recall any. I don't recall a family. In fact, I can recall maybe two females, but I'd say the majority seem to be single males.
From the pictures, I saw like 6 or 7 units there. I thought we had designated only 3 spots there. Is that?
I think once we get done with public comment, I'll share kind of where we're at with this. But I think there's still more public comment.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I've got some more comments.
Yeah, let's work our way through public comment, then we can kind of discuss.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brett.
Lurlin Patrick.
Hi there. I don't specifically have a business there, but I have the apartments next to the parking lot. I'm also in contact with the owner that has the kind of wooded lot across the street that's right next door to the salon. And before you actually started, had approved the designated parking, my husband's construction group took out 2 dump trailers full of trash from that wooded area. There were 4 camps where there had been multiple people there, and it took over 6 months before I was able to contact the owner to let her know what was going on, and we had law enforcement out there, which was great. But then with the van that's over there, it's been over there for over a week. There's the black motorhome that is, I agree, it is scary to look at. My kitchen window looks right over the parking lot. I hear the voices at night. Not coming from my head, but coming from the parking lot. I hear the arguments. I see them throwing rocks at each other. And then also with the with what they brought on is that we took out some vegetation because people were also living in the vegetation between the parking lot and the apartments. There's trash there. There's been human feces in you know, right alongside the property. They're using our trash bins, which in a way is fine because it's keeping it off the street, but they are, you know, they tend to be a nuisance. I actually watched a gentleman today with his little, the shopping cart that had been there for a week. It disappeared for a couple of days. He was back there and it was raining, and he went over there and sat between the van and the motorhome. There was a family that was there about 2 weeks ago that were there for about 4 days. They were in the middle of the parking lot. They end up having an altercation with the motorhome next to them. There, if you want to see some good drama, sit there and watch what goes on in the parking lot. It's, I understand that we need to treat people with respect, but there also needs to be rule of law, the rules that everybody lives by, that need to be enforced. And I understand that law enforcement is stretched thin at times. I understand that. But then also when it comes down to where I've been wanting to go down there and to talk to people, but you know what? I'm scared to do so. Because the one motorhome that's right next to it, they have a dog there. They do let it out there or have a chain on their next to their vehicle. I don't walk by there anymore with my dog because it charges my dog. And I'm afraid that my dog, who's a big, scaredy, woofy dog, is going to get hurt, and I'm going to jump in, and either me or their dog is not going to survive. And I know you're in a hard place. I know there's federal rules. There's things that you can and cannot do, but there's got to be something that can be done. A fence would be great, but this is going to hopefully contain the people, contain it, but then the noise is still going to travel. Parking lots, about the only time that parking lot has really been full was been a few years back with Seafood and Wine, or when we've had another large event. And I really, really feel for the businesses, because also going over to La Roca, trying to go to maneuver, I don't even walk through the parking lot there to go to La Roca to go have something to eat. I walk around the block just so I don't have to deal with them. And then there again, also to take my dog to a walk, I avoid that one like the plague, because it's not comfortable, it's not safe, because I can guarantee you, if I start talking to one of them, there's going to be a big altercation, because I've had it passed here. This has been going on increasingly for over 30 years. Then there's got to be something. There's got to be something we can do. But I understand that you have rules that you have to follow. So if you have any questions, bring it on.
I just want to say, we all want to be safe in our neighborhoods, and that's the goal, and that's what our police department works hard on. Okay. Unfortunately, we have a lot of other problems that it's hard for us. Okay. You know, we're trying to come up with this ordinance that would preclude some of this stuff, but there's a lot of landmines, unfortunately, in the ordinance that we have to be careful how we craft it. And we're hopeful at the end of when we get it finally finished, that people on both sides can live with it and we can all be safe in our neighborhoods. That's the goal.
I understand that. But then also to kind of reiterate a little bit more, they're again having, I've got 8 units across the street. Yeah. I'm somewhat responsible for their safety because I'm providing housing for them. And when I also see some of my tenants talk to me about they're not comfortable there, and they're living so much, you know, just a little bit closer than what I am. Yeah. So I'm not sure what can be done, because they're also they've also spilled out back behind my apartment, behind one of the apartments between me and the bakery, and then also over on the other side. My neighbor that lives directly across the street, she would have been here, but she has something else to do because she's also does not feel comfortable. I've got people over on 11th Street that I've spoke to that when we went through to remove some of the brush from the wooded area, there was somebody that was camping behind one small bush on the bush in back. So it's not just the parking lot. It's impacting the entire neighborhood.
It is. And the whole town as well.
Yeah, I understand. Hatfield Drive, there's the person that lives in the tent there. And then there's also by the carriage house people, there was another tent that was inside the bushes there that it takes a little bit to see. So there is an issue here, and I really don't know what to do about it. I don't know what can be done. because federal laws have changed, especially even more so within the last couple of years.
If it was a simple solution, we would have done it long ago.
Yeah, I agree.
But we're working on it.
I understand that, and I appreciate it, but there again, this still needs to be brought more to the front of not just Deco District, but all of Newport. Because, you know, it does impact tourism. It does impact those of us that live here. And it's not a pretty sight.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. Julie Turner.
Thank you for letting me come up and speak. And ironically, I had an episode right before I went out to the valley. I rushed my way back. I go to Jody and Robin's salon and feel very uncomfortable every time I'm going over there. But ironically, like the last person was speaking, it is expanding out in that area. So my office, I work for Lincoln County School District. I'm a school nurse. And I am now in the Compass Center, which is the old district office, and has that big parking structure behind it. I can't tell you how many times since I've moved there, which has been, I believe they moved just about a year and a half ago, we have had to call law enforcement for them loitering, using it as a toilet in there. And when I went to leave today, so it would have been at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, there were two gentlemen sitting in the corner where my car was parked, pedaling, talking about they had some tools out there that they were gonna sell. So my question is, were they stolen? And no regard to me. I mean, just, you know, the fear to get into the car. And this is not an unusual situation for us over at the district office, that it really is expanding out in that area, that they're feeling more and more comfortable. They're usually on that lot that's just north of the parking lot. And so it is, I don't feel safe. It's the middle of the day, and where do I park to go to do my job? Or if I go out, you know, we all are calling the officers, and they're, I mean, our law enforcement is taxed. I understand that. But what do I get to do as a citizen to feel comfortable to walk even to my car during daylight and they don't move, they don't leave? And yes, it is a pettier crime and they have rights too, but that is private property and the police can only shoo them out and they turn around and come right back. And so I'm really at a loss. We have kids coming in and out, families, because we have the help center. It's just not a safe environment where they're in their parking. So I don't know what other options to do. And like I said, I do go to Jody and Robin's salon, and it's just gotten worse and worse. I've seen multiple families out there in these broken down vehicles. And are they homeless? Yes. Are they going to school? I don't know. You know, and they just seem to be transient and going. So isn't that the best interest for the kids too? And yet, you know, there's no truancy officer technically anymore. So how do I even find out where those kids are? So just voicing my concerns as well.
Well, I think that, you know, the council's very aware of all your complaints and the rest of you as well. And it's something that we're wrestling with and we're trying to come up with the best solution. And we are working hard on it. And from the law enforcement aspect, you know, unfortunately, our department has been cut the last couple of years, so we don't have as many officers to handle all the situations that we have, and that exacerbates some of the other problems, unfortunately. But hopefully with this new budget coming up soon, we can remedy a little bit of that, not all of it. But I think that just you all need to know that we are working very hard on this. It's not easy. It's not going to happen tomorrow. And we're working on a homeless shelter as well. That's kind of in the mix, and where that's going to go, we don't know. But there's just a lot of things that need to happen, and unfortunately, they can't happen overnight.
Thank you.
Thank you. Spencer?
Yeah, I think I appreciate the comments that everyone has made tonight. You know, we had, again, a very specific situation with the parking in the lot that was discussed. And from a staff standpoint, we presented some ideas to the council. Council has redirected it back to us to take a look at trying to approach it a little differently than what was being proposed. And I think what we'll do specifically for the folks that are here is give an opportunity for folks to meet with staff as we're kind of working our way through this to hear what specific thoughts and ideas you have. And there were a number of ideas that I wrote down tonight that folks had about trying to mitigate the immediate situation. But the real challenging situation that we have right now is that we do not have an enforceable camping or sleeping ordinance that if we had 100 police, we wouldn't be able to deal with some of the issues that are talked about here because we don't have a legal ordinance that we can enforce. Council's working on trying to get a legal document that tries to balance these issues as best we can, dealing with the humanitarian issues, dealing with the private property issues, dealing with the safety issues that have been mentioned here. And so we will be bringing that back to the council based on the initial discussion that we had with council on this. And we're also waiting, the whole landscape and how you regulate homelessness and use of camping has changed very dramatically with the federal court rulings that have occurred. You know, the issue with abandoned vehicles is all changed now. If someone's using the abandoned vehicle for a home, you know, there's just been many, many changes that have occurred that make it very difficult to try to find a reasonable balance to provide places for people that need shelter, but also to deal with some of the challenges and issues that were brought up here tonight. And so, anyway, I will get in contact with folks, and I think most people listed those that listed email addresses. We've got phone numbers on these yeah. lists. We'll get an invite out to specifically talk about this specific issue when we have this meeting coming up in 2 weeks. And we'll invite you there to kind of share your thoughts.
I think the biggest frustration for me is the legal problems. You know, we're a rock in a hard place on some of these things, and it's just frustrating when we come up with a solution, we go, let's do it, and then all of a sudden there's a legal issue that you can't do it. And it makes it very frustrating. It just exacerbates and moves the final solution further down the road, kicks that can down the road. And in the interim, you folks have to deal with it. And that's the sad part. Anyway, thank you all for coming. We really appreciate it. Okay, Peggy, do we have the next item?
The next item on the agenda is the consent calendar. And tonight, the consent calendar consists of...
Before we do that, Ryan, did you have an item you wanted to add to the agenda?
Yeah, I just wanted to add an item under communications. A similar vein to what we were just talking about. So I guess I wanted to talk about the City Hall campus specific to camping in the portico and an abandoned vehicle that's been across the street for probably 6 months. I just wanted to get an update from staff on that, on those issues as far as how we can thread the legal needle to allow open and equal access to City Hall, but also make sure that visitors and staff are safe and unencumbered.
Could we do that at 5B?
Yeah, you can. It takes a vote of 75% of the council okay. to add it to the agenda. So it should be a motion.
What is the issue we're talking about?
What's that?
City Hall campus safety.
That's pretty general. What specific thing are we putting on the agenda?
Yeah, so make a motion, Ryan. I move to add
a discussion item about transients camping in the front door of City Hall and abandoned vehicles across from City Hall in a framework of staff and visitor safety and best practices.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Second.
Okay, motion made by Councillor Parker, seconded by Councillor Jacoby. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, motion passes unanimously.
Okay, everyone voted for it?
Yeah, yeah.
Aye. And CM too.
Yeah, okay, I 100%. Heard the late vote from CM.
You didn't think I was going to vote for that, did you, Spencer?
Well, he was worried.
I stopped paying attention momentarily when the vote occurred, so.
Okay, we'll do that at 5B then. Peggy, go ahead.
All right, tonight the consent calendar consists of approval of minutes of the regular City Council meeting of April 4th, 2022, approval of minutes of the work session of April 18th, 2022, Approval of minutes of the regular city council meeting of April 18th, 2022. Ratification of the mayor's appointment of Donald J. to the 60-plus advisory committee for a term expiring December 31st, 2023. Favorably recommend to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission the approval of an OLCC full on-premise license as a new outlet for Shark's Seafood Bar and Steamer Company located at 4852 North Coast Highway and receipt of approved committee minutes.
Do I have a motion?
I'll move to accept the consent calendar for Monday, May 2nd, 2022.
I'll second.
Motion made by Councilor Parker, seconded by Councilor Jacoby. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Thank you. Peggy, next item.
Aye.
Right.
We have a satellite
delay. Thank you, CM.
Good about you, CM.
She's pointing on the next motion.
The next item on the agenda is under communications. It's from OCCA Executive Director Jason Holland. Presentation of the annual report for the Oregon Coast Council for the Arts.
Hey, Spencer, is it in the interest of everyone's time and Jason's time too, can we flip 5A and 6A, or is that, it seems like most people are here for 6A. Is that something that we're going to be willing to do?
Council can do whatever they want to do here. Are you okay delaying?
What does council want to do?
That's fine with me.
That's got what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll make people wait.
Okay. Sorry, Jason. We will get to you. Okay, go ahead.
Sorry, I lost Jason's vote.
Just about heard from you there.
Maybe not.
Great report, by the way.
So we're doing 6A now?
So 6A is report on noise concerns from adjacent residential properties regarding the South Beach Church.
Spencer.
At the city council meeting on April 18th, Shailene Chavez and Amy Bendel shared their concerns about the impact of loud music coming from the South Beach Church has had on the quality of life at their homes, located on Chestnut Street to east of the South Beach Church. Ms. Bendel and Chavez expressed their frustration with lack of response from the police department, and specifically the lack of response following the meeting they had with Police Chief Malloy and myself in early March. At this city council meeting on April 18th, I indicated that I'd prepare a report for the meeting for the council tonight on this matter. I did have an opportunity to, again, follow up with a staff meeting with Derek Tokos, Jason Malloy, and Pastor Luke Frechette from the South Beach Church to discuss the concerns that were expressed. After that meeting, I did follow up with the homeowners that were at the meeting to discuss the kind of the results of that and presented what the process would be going forward on this particular complaint. So after having the discussions with Pastor Luke and Amy Bendel and Shailene Chavez, as well as city staff, the steps that we plan to take are the following moving forward. One, any noise complaints reported to the police department will be promptly investigated by the department. And if loud noises occur, Pastor Luke, as a representative of South Beach Church, would be cited. Two, the music levels, particularly the bass levels, will be reduced until effective sound deadening steps can be taken and proven effective at the church. Three, the main times for sound production or live music will be limited to the times outlined in the letter dated April 28, 2022, as provided by Pastor Luke. Four, if verifiable loud music complaints persist, the URA, as an option, could consider termination of the lease, which is a month-to-month lease, prior to the fall of 2023, which is when the intent would be to terminate the lease based on the redevelopment of the site. Again, I certainly apologize for the delay in responding to the property owners, and I appreciate Pastor Luke's willingness to sit down with us, and that's how we intend to proceed on this matter, barring any thoughts anyone else has on it. So, and I think you had some public comment on this.
Yes, I do. We'll start off with Amy Bendel.
Thank you for flipping the order. I'd like to begin by saying thank you to the City Council for allowing us time at the meeting on the 18th to speak about the noise issue. I know you already had a very full agenda that evening, and you were very generous with the amount of time that you allotted us. Since bringing this issue in front of the City Council on the 18th, there has been minimal noise from the church. And for that, I would extend a thank you to Luke Frechette for his immediate compliance. The day after we spoke with the council, two of my neighbors received a text message from Luke with a new tone. Instead of condescension, it was apologetic. However, these are responses that I have been hearing for years. He's always committed to making things better, but nothing ever seems to change. I'd like to note that the compliance appears to have been voluntary, because even though the city manager was instructed to make the issue a priority, it was 9 days before a meeting with the church finally occurred. I was surprised to find out on Thursday the 28th that the meeting had already taken place, because I was advised multiple times by Spencer at the last council meeting that he would contact me prior to the meeting to let me know when it was scheduled, and that he would also contact me after the meeting with an update. I'm sure you can appreciate that due to the amount of insincerity I've received from Spencer over the last 9 weeks, it's difficult for me to believe anything he says at this point. In the city manager's report to the council, Spencer stated that he would like the property owners to meet with Luke Frechette to discuss the issues and that Luke is willing to experience what we've been going through. To this, I would say that it was offered to both Luke and his AV person, Esai Taylor, multiple times to come to two different residences to see what we've been complaining about. Neither of them ever tried to do so, so I find it interesting that now Luke is willing to make the effort. And to be clear, the invitations for them to come to our properties has been rescinded. In the last paragraph of Spencer's report, he indicates that he, quote, appreciates the expressions from the Pastor Luke's committed to this process, end quote. I think I understand what he was trying to say, but considering that I've had years of excuses and nonsense already from this lessee, I'm not inclined to automatically buy into this commitment. In response to the letter that Luke submitted to the council, I would like to say that while we appreciate his sudden willingness to discuss possible solutions to reduce the noise, we are not interested in meeting with him. It is not my nor my neighbor's responsibility to police this situation. We have a police department and two full-time community service officers for that. Furthermore, it should be the city's responsibility to hold the tenants to their lease agreements. We are under no obligation to meet with your lessees or to agree to any requests or contact your lessees prior to reporting an ordinance violation. I personally have tried for 10 years to be a good neighbor. I've heard different versions of the claims that Luke makes in this letter for years. The only difference now is that we finally realize that we have power as homeowners. This renter's not allowed to be a nuisance in our neighborhood, and we can't allow him to get away with it any longer. I would like to be very clear about our position. There has been a legitimate nuisance complaint brought to you. It should be an issue between the city and their tenant. May I finish?
Keep going. Thank you. Try to finish up.
It's very large type.
Great.
Any steps taken to alleviate the issue should be the responsibility of the tenant, and it's the landlord's responsibility to ensure the conditions of the lease are being followed. You should not be requesting that the homeowners of the neighboring properties get involved in this. Luke is aware of this issue and has been for years. I have been told many times how the building has complexities that make it difficult to control the sound, but that's not our problem. You are renting a large metal building to a tenant that has been allowed to use sound-producing and amplification devices inside of it. The space is clearly not intended for that type of use, and if the noise goes above the acceptable level again, we will call the police. In conclusion, I would like to say that aside from the City Council, I am disappointed in all parties that had involved in this, that this had to be made public in this manner. It could have been solved years ago if they had just been willing to make any efforts to reduce the noise. It could have been solved 9 weeks ago if the city manager and the chief of police would do what they promised they would do for us. But most of all, I'm disappointed in myself for allowing this to continue for so long, because I should have come to you sooner. I was trying to be a good neighbor, and only after being told multiple times by different officers to bring the issue in front of the city council did I realize that this was the only way that we could live in peace. So I thank you to the council for your intervention in this issue. The neighborhood has been calm over the last 2 weeks. I expect it will continue, but if it doesn't, I may be back in front of you asking for further action. Thank you.
Thank you. Charlene?
I'm short and sweet. I want to say that in the last 2 weeks, I do want to tell you that it has been great in the neighborhood. So I do appreciate everybody on this panel and Luke for turning down the music. So as a neighborhood, I'll tell you what, I've never been able to sit out front of my front yard and enjoy in the evening, and it's been great. So I want to appreciate that. So I'm really hoping, I didn't know Luke was going to be here tonight. Spencer said he wasn't. So I'm really hoping that we can keep following what has been put forth in the last 2 weeks in our neighborhood. And I just want to say thank you.
Okay, thank you. Spencer, did you want to say anything?
No, I think, again, this is an issue that has been going on for 10 years. The first I've been involved with it was, 8 weeks ago. And again, I'm sorry it didn't resolve in the time it did, and I apologize to Amy on that. This is kind of what we've worked out, and hopefully this resolves the issue, and we've kind of laid out the process if there's ongoing, concerns in the future.
Okay. I want to thank you both for bringing this to our attention. It's an important one. Everybody wants to have a peaceful place to live. I probably should tell a story on myself. When I was in college, I played in the band, and I played clarinet. And it was during football season, and they came to me, and they said, "We're short a drummer. Do you want to play the tenor drum tonight?" And I said, "Sure." Well, after I did that, they came to me and said, "Go back to the clarinet, please." So I guess I feel your pain, in a certain way. But we want to thank you, and hopefully, I know that we've had discussions with Luke, and I'm sure that things will get better, and he's assured us that the problem won't continue, and he knows that if he doesn't, he'll get a citation, and I know he doesn't want a citation. So anyway, thank you both very much. Okay, should we go back to 6A?
This is CM. Can you hear me? I have a question about this.
Yes. Go ahead.
There she is.
This is CM. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah. Can you hear
I have
me?
A question about this, because what I want to get really clear about is, okay, yes. What I'm not 100% clear about is the folks who came before us just now had called multiple times to the Newport Police Department. And in all of those times, no noise infraction citations were issued. And what I'm trying to get clear on is if they call again, will a citation be issued?
Yeah, the answer
because
to
I didn't like the first meeting being like, call the police, then they call the police, and then it didn't happen.
Yeah, the answer to that question is yes, and there was a question on who would receive the citation, and we've outlined that in the report that I have provided after meeting with the police chief after he did some further research on that issue.
Did you get that, CM?
She's froze up.
Delaware's a long way from
she
here.
She can't hear us.
I didn't get it. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I couldn't hear it. I could not hear your response, Spencer. I'm happy to take it offline.
Okay. I will share offline with you on that, we'll chat about that.
Great. Okay. Thank you all.
Did Luke want to speak?
Oh, did you want to say? Come on up.
I would like to answer that question from CM. The question was: if there's one more call, it's an instant citation. And the answer that came from Spencer just now was yes, but I don't think that was the language in the letter. The language in the letter is: if there's a call, there'll be a police dispatched, and then if there is indeed an infraction
Correct.
Or an ordinance violation. If there's an ordinance violation, so you can't just complain about an ordinance violation and say that it was violated.
Right. So there was a situation where the police arrived and there was very loud music going on at 10:30 at night or some, and a citation was not issued at that time. That's one of the specific examples
right.
where we witnessed a, and in this particular case, if that were to happen again, there would be a citation issued if the officer verifies the situation.
Right. And I think one of the complexities is hopefully our timeline with music violations or loud ordinance violations. It's actually hopefully not that long of a duration. Sometimes on Thursdays we go for upwards of 2 hours of worship rehearsal. And so there'll be a song, they'll stop, they go for 2 hours. On our Sundays where we start a little earlier, it's like a 25 to 30 minute chunk in the mornings that would be heard in the neighboring community. And so my fear is that, like, particularly this next Sunday's Mother's Day. And so Mother's Day, we're going to have a full band. For the last two, maybe three Sundays, we've reduced our stage presence to one musician only in order to let things calm down while we adjust our in-house volumes. And so here's what's going to happen this Sunday. We're going to have a full band. There's going to be a drummer. There's going to be a bass player. There's going to be singers. They're all going to be there. Now, I don't know how loud it's going to be. I'm willing to, this Thursday in the rain, go 200, 300 feet from our property and do the investigation with the decibel meters. How loud is it? I don't know your addresses. I don't know where they live. If they're willing, if you guys want to do that together, I'd be willing to. It sounds like you're not at this point, which I understand. And so we're willing to do the work on our end at this point to ensure that we don't make those ordinance violations. But I'm also, we can't, you know, there's 1,000 people coming to our church on any given Sunday. And to say that we're not going to be seen or heard again, or I'll be cited if we are, is a huge risk on my part, which I'm, you know, I don't know what else to do. So we are making adjustments. I can't guarantee that those adjustments are going to be acceptable based on the amount of kind of energy that we're dealing with. So we're gonna do our best, but, you know, hopefully I don't get cited. But I can't guarantee it. But I'm willing to work, and I'm willing to have a conversation right now too, if you guys have the time. Yeah. I'm fine with it. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, hang on just a minute.
Sorry.
Yeah, if you can come up and speak in the mic.
Why don't you come up?
Sorry, guys.
Just a quick question. So in the last 2 weeks, what you're saying is what we were not hearing, mm-hmm. we're going to hear going forward.
What you're going to hear on Sunday is going to be different than what you've heard the last 2 weeks. I don't know. We're going to reduce the sound. So I honestly don't know, like, how loud it's going to be unless you guys want to meet on Thursday, which is our rehearsal for this Sunday. You don't have to. If you don't want to do that, we'll do it ourselves.
I think we're kind of going long here.
Sorry about that.
I think this is maybe something that we can set up maybe a second meeting to where people can talk one-on-one.
And we tried to set that up, and they Spencer wanted to meet with us and handle that, and at this point they're unwilling to.
Okay.
Which is, I mean, we could.
Well, we have asked multiple times.
All right. I just don't
want to get
one
a big,
second here.
Big dissertation right now.
Sorry.
So
what concerns me is that the neighborhood has expressed their concerns, and then I just heard you say, I didn't hear the tone of what you said being appreciative of the neighborhood. And so please understand that even though it's a metal building and sound reverberates, I get that, but they have the right to live in privacy and peace. And regardless of what time of day or which day of the week, that right persists 7 days a week at all times. And so I get that you're backstopped against some acoustic issues that I feel as a lessee of the Urban Renewal Agency, that's kind of on your organization to solve internally. And so that was a concern of mine after hearing what you just said.
What I said was is that we've reduced our sound. We've already unplugged two of our 18-inch speakers. We've done that. I'm just saying on Sunday when we go forward, I hope that it was enough. I don't know if we're kind of flying blind at this point without participation. We want to participate. And so we're making adjustments, and we're willing to.
And I would ask feedback from the neighbors after this Sunday. Let me know what you experienced.
Right. Can I be brief?
Brief, please.
We are willing to show grace that we have shown for 10 years. We're not asking you to be silent and not seen and not heard, but you know how many times I have contacted you and asked you to turn it down, and I've got nothing but, you know, oh, well, we're practicing in this. If I text you this Sunday and say, turn it down, I expect it to be turned down. And to say that it was offered to meet with us and that it was suggested by Mr. Niebel is a bit disingenuous, because we were told that the meeting could happen with Spencer, Mr. Tokos, and the chief of police, but it would not be for 2 to 3 weeks because both of them were going to be off on, and he would like us to meet with him on our own. And I'm just, the situation is volatile. We can't do that. We can't be expected to do that. That's not fair to us. And thank you for pointing that out. We will try to show as much grace as we can, but if I ask you to turn it down, I don't want an argument. I want it turned down. But we're willing to work with you, but I'm not willing to meet with you. It's not up to me to turn it down. It's up to you.
Understood.
Okay.
Friends?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and that's the bottom line that we like to see.
We're
Thank
not
you.
Trying to be hard cases. We want to work with you, but there's got to be some give and take
here. I would say you're not wrong.
Thank you.
You've heard us. And you've heard us from however far away your house is. And so you're not wrong. You're not making this up. This isn't wrong. This morning when I got up at 6:30, I got out of bed before my wife did, and I shut the windows because today's Monday, right? So the trash trucks are driving by, and it's loud. It's like, okay, I got to make adjustments. I understand what it's like to have your peace interrupted.
Thank you.
So I apologize. I do apologize.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
I just know I work from home, so it's
I know.
Yeah. Okay,
so
thank you all for that.
On.
Dean Martin, did you have
a
comment?
Thank you guys also.
Yeah,
Pastor
Luke,
appreciate it.
I just had a comment.
Yes.
So I think what I heard the neighbor saying in a previous meeting was that the bass, I think, is the culprit in your...
Majority. You would not be able to hear the high levels that far.
The bass sound is what's causing the problem, I think, and the drums. The high notes, I don't think, are going to be causing the problem. Singing, I don't think it's going to be causing a problem.
And I would be honest, the drums are my fear, because even if we don't mic the drums, there's no amplification on the drums, then we either have to never use a drum again. Right now, we amplify the drums in order to get the full house sound.
Yeah, that's what's happening as the bass is...
Right, so we're going to reduce that drastically. And hopefully accomplish a happy medium, if not some major improvements.
Well, hopefully we don't have...
And I apologize for it coming to this. I really do. I'm so sorry.
I am too. Yeah. I didn't want it to.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
Let's squash that.
Thank you all. Thank you all very much.
Thank you guys for your time.
And Dietmar, I'm going to show up at the golf course Sunday morning with my tenor drum.
No basses. But
I'll bring my bass.
Thank you, Pastor.
Okay. Thank you all.
Mayor, this is CM. Can I ask a follow-up question?
Sure.
So my question is, during the daytime, there's a different noise decibel allowance than after quiet hours, right? So during the daytime, what Amy's saying is, I expect you to turn it down, but during the service, during the day, it might be at a more permissible sound decibel level, right? So I guess I want to know a little bit more about those levels and what's allowed during the day versus what's allowed after what would be perceived as quiet hours.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so CM, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. So anyway, there are ordinance requirements. There's two parts to this question. There's ordinance requirements, then there's also the lease that the city has that has other standards. The ordinance requirements have specific decibel limits at the edge of what they call sensitive properties, as outlined in the report. And if it's exceeding that amount, it's something that could be prosecuted under ordinance. And part of that is oftentimes done just by the officer being down there to verify that the noise is at an acceptable level at that location. From as the city or the Urban Renewal Agency leasing that facility, we also have a provision in the lease that indicates that any tenant that the city has or the Urban Renewal Agency has can't create a disturbance to neighboring properties as well. That's kind of bound by a different standard, and so there, we've got both pieces to that puzzle in sorting this issue out. The best scenario is if the church can reduce their volume, particularly for bass and percussion, and it becomes tolerable for the neighbors. And it's limited to those certain times. That's the best solution. And if we can, if there's a problem, I'm sure that we will know about that. So,
thanks.
So, I had the lease language right here. If you want to hear it. So, in the lease we have with the church, under section 3.2, which is restrictions on use, section 3. This is what it says. The church shall, and I'm quoting from the lease, refrain from any use that would be reasonably offensive to other lessees or owners or users of neighboring premises, or that would tend to create a nuisance or damage the reputation of the premises. That's the lease language that the church has agreed to in the lease with the Urban Renewal Agency.
Thank you.
Okay. You got your question answered there, CM?
I did, thank you.
Okay, thank you all.
We will
be in touch for sure.
Thank you, everyone.
Okay, we're gonna now go back to 5A, correct, Peggy?
That's correct. This is the annual report from the Oregon
He's
Coast
still
Council
here?
For the Arts.
Yeah.
Or the last man standing. So,
thank you.
The Oregon Coast Council for the Arts Executive Director, Jason Holland, is here and will provide an annual report to the City Council regarding the activities of OCCA.
As you know, OCCA is the city's manager for the city-owned Performing Arts Center and the Visual Arts Center, and that's under contract with the city. Jason began his responsibilities during the COVID-19 emergency, so he's not experienced a normal time in operating either the VAC or the PAC since he's been here, but hopefully we've got more normal times coming forward. So anyway, at this point, I'll turn it over to Jason for the report from OCCA to the City Council.
Thank you, Spencer. Yes, you are correct. And I will admit to you all that I wasn't sure how to approach this report because it didn't really summarize a typical operating environment or a typical operating period. So, you know, hopefully this met with your approval. What I tried to do and said was kind of tell you a story of what where we were a year ago, roughly a year ago, and kind of where we are closer to this time period. Basically, we wanted to approach crisis as an opportunity for catalytic change or an opportunity to experience and explore new things, new partnerships, and new programs. So what I'm going to take you through is from reopening, rebuilding, through recovery, and into reengaging and reimagining. That's kind of how I tried to structure the report. So I'm not going to read the whole thing back to you. I'm just going to kind of summarize the sections, and please ask any questions that you have. But about a year ago, obviously, we were shuttered at this point in time, earlier last calendar year. The Visual Arts Center, thankfully, was able to reopen quite quickly due to the nature of visiting that space and walking through that space during COVID. The nature of being in that building was different than being in the Performing Arts Center, sitting side by side with many people. So very happily, we were able to get the VAC open first with some reduced hours. And one of the things I, you know, share in here is that it was really helpful to lean on the city, the county, and the state, and then even in some cases national sources to help us figure out how to do that correctly in both a visual arts space and in a performing arts space, particularly complicated in the performing arts where what you were and were not allowed to do also depended on the art form that was being presented. So you were treated differently if you were a dancer versus if you sang or you played an instrument, a clarinet in your case, Mr. Mayor. So kind of wrapping our heads around all of that and figuring out how to move forward safely. I do note in here that for a period of time, it was kind of interesting to see jury selection and trials happening inside the Performing Arts Center. I think it was a perfect example of how we all just had to pivot during COVID. And then the next phase was really about rebuilding. So this is about the time that I got to the organization and was trying to take stock of what was there, what we needed, maybe what systems could be improved, and particularly looking for efficiencies with a reduced headcount, and also to sort of modernize some of the systems. There's a quote that I like by James Clear that says, "You do not rise to the level of your goals, you fall to the level of your systems." And that's kind of how it felt during that time period, was just making sure that the systems could come up to the level that we wanted them to so that we could serve the community better once we were open again. So spent some time doing that. And then we moved to kind of the recover period of time where I wanted to kind of highlight for you kind of two things. One was give you a snapshot of what was happening at the state level in the arts and also certainly nationally, but I wanted to give you Oregon data. So I used some 2019 data compared to 2021 data just to kind of give you a sense of how in the arts and culture sector things were impacted. You know, no surprise, it's happened in any sector that you can think of, but I didn't know if you had heard from the arts and culture sector specifically. So about a 32% drop in paid positions in the arts across the state. Of course, volunteerism went down. Total in-person attendance, which makes sense, down 41%. And importantly, earned revenue going down from about $118 million across the state in 2019 to only $27 million in 2021. So really just illustrating that impact in an area where many organizations rely on that earned revenue. But what was a huge blessing amidst this crisis was the inflow of support dollars, you know, that were leveraged from either federal sources or state sources, county, et cetera, et cetera. And I listed a number of those there, particularly CARES Act funding and American Rescue Plan Act funding. those dollars not only helped OCCA, but at a different point in the document, I believe I mentioned to you the amount of money that then flowed through OCCA to other local nonprofits. So that was really critical to help small arts organizations stay alive during a time period where they couldn't really earn as much revenue as they were used to. So that brought us into, I shared our financials. These are unadjusted figures from June 30th, 2021. So you could just kind of see a sort of a snapshot of where things were at that time, where we were in income, expenses, and net surpluses at the end of the year. One thing I do want to note to you is that my goal the next time I'm in front of you doing this is that the financial figures you're seeing are much more current than what I think you've seen and what you're seeing now. Part of the system improvement that is going on behind the scenes is a transition from an old accounting system to QuickBooks Nonprofit Edition and folding all the capital campaign accounts into that process as well. So we've moved from two different sets of books into one set of books and getting better efficiencies with that bookkeeping and that accounting software. So you'll see the fruits of that effort the next time I'm in front of you talking about this. Of course, you know, I share with you a breakdown of income, breakdown of expenses. There is nothing typical about what you're seeing in that breakdown. You know, you'll see giant amounts of grant dollars and things like that. It's just not typical. But nonetheless, that I wanted you to see kind of what it looked like for us. Of course, thanking the city, thanking our supporters, you know, who kind of stuck with us through that time period that really helped us stay afloat and stay solvent and be ready to reopen. So now that kind of brings us to the more positive and the more forward-looking part of the story, which is, you know, re-engaging and reactivating. So thankfully, of course, we did open last summer the Performing Arts Center. We expanded the operating hours of the VAC. We were able to serve more people. And we started collaborating with community partners, which is really, I think, at the heart of what we love to do. You all are familiar, I believe, with the Art Bus that was acquired last summer. So I shared with you some of the great partnerships that have come out of that, and there's, you know, so many more to come. We did our first jazz party again after being shuttered and shared some highlights with you on, you know, numbers of visitors and audience members that we had in the kind of the second half of last calendar year. And I guess lastly is the reimagined part of the story. So this is sort of where we are now. We're seeing obviously more performances that are happening. Again, partnerships growing and building, expanding operating hours in the VAC. June 3rd, we'll be adding another day a week that the VAC will be open. And really just the excitement of things that are now in front of us. So the new kiln is functional at the VAC. That's allowed for a number of classes to happen. So there'll be a clay camp this summer for kids. There'll be 6 weeks of camp for kids this summer, which is a nice growth in serving kids this summer. Of course, like I mentioned, the Art Bus is going. We just had our first community celebration last Saturday, Bloom Newport. I think a couple of you, at least a few were there. I saw a few of you. We just had a fantastic time celebrating with the community on Saturday, and the weather was pretty well-behaved, not too bad. We have a new artist-in-residence program, starting with Yaquinahead Outstanding Natural Area, starting in next month, which is the first time we've done that with them. Very excited about that. And I also wanted to mention, I'm really seeing the potential for more partnerships and collaborations with other departments at the city. So for example, Parks and Rec and the Senior Center and I have started having those kind of early conversations about what might it look like for us to collaborate. I mean, we're both in the business of serving the community. How might we work together to serve the community in a more strategic way? And of course, I know you all know about the capital campaign for the Performing Arts Center, and we are hoping that we will see good bids come in the next couple months, which will allow us to start construction later this summer. So that is kind of the overview of the quick story that I wanted to tell. I certainly want to make time for questions that you might have and respond to those.
Questions? Cynthia?
I have a question. Please. Hi. Thanks for coming, Jason, and sure. For your patience
sure.
This evening. I have a question yeah. on the page about income.
Yeah.
What exactly is the foundational support?
So those are contributed sources of revenue that we get from grants and foundations, which is pretty typical for a nonprofit. But obviously, when we're shuttered and earned revenue is lower, that contributed source is much higher. So those are just foundation dollars that came through to the organization.
Okay. Yeah, I must say I really enjoyed the live performance, Tarzan. Did you all know that Tim Gross was in it in a major part in that play?
Yeah, that was an impressive undertaking, and it was really the biggest sort of musical that had reopened.
It was well done.
Yeah,
very well done.
Yeah, it's been great seeing audiences in the theater again. It's also been great getting, you know, we continue to get their feedback on how the protocols are going. You know, how can we make as many people as possible feel comfortable coming into the spaces? And that's something we'll continue to do as best we can.
Beatrice?
Do you have classes for the mayor? Because
music? We would love to have him teach a clarinet class.
Nice clarinet.
The clarinet. So I just want to say, Jason, I see on your, the presentation, the first picture, you know, that's the one that when you went to the South Beach Park.
Yep. Yes.
And I recognized the kids. Yes. I was thinking, yes,
I love that picture.
There. Yeah. I just want to say thank you for building the relationship. I always believe that building the relation with the community is very important. And I would recognize you didn't miss any time during COVID to approach people from the community, finding what they want to see and how they want to collaborate. I think, you know, that's the important part, you know. Building those relationships and not being afraid, because, you know, after all, that's how we learn. That's how we see how collaborate, you know, with the community. And I just want to recognize that you did that. You have done really good job looking in the community how to collaborate and build that. And I hear from Laura from the library that she's going to do an event with you, mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. And it's so nice that, you know, collaboration with the city.
Yeah.
You know, they're already families, you know, that sometimes might not have the opportunity. And this opens doors, you know. Some of them, I hear, you know, some of the families, they said, I have never been at the PAC Center. Mm-hmm. So opens an opportunity for families to visit there.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that. And I just want you to know it's very important to me that the community not only understands it, but knows that these buildings are their buildings. You know, that they belong there both literally and sort of from a more of a community embrace. The word that's important to me is the word belonging. And I want everyone to know that they belong in any of, you know, well, certainly in the two buildings that I can speak to, but I know that they feel that way in all of the city spaces. And I think that's an important thing to make sure that the community is being invited, is welcomed, and has a space to be heard as well. So just an open invitation for the city and other departments for collaboration and how we can serve the city, the community in ways going forward, because we're going to have to do it together. It helps extend our resources. It helps deepen the impact of the work we do together. And I love that work, so I look forward to it. And I look forward to, you know, hopefully stabilizing the environment in which we're trying to do this work. I know we all feel that way.
Yeah. And thank you for working on grants, because even when it was hard, you know, during COVID time, I can see 30% in grant. And it's not an easy job to write grants. You know, you are competing with other people. Right. So we are trying to hire a grant writer maybe in the future here at the city.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we could get some tips on how we are just proposing that, you know.
Yeah. I'd be happy to support in any way I can.
Yeah, and I think one thing, too, on the grants, because this was one thing we had talked about earlier, too.
Yeah.
This was a little unusual because there was a substantial amount of funding that was specifically earmarked to help save some of the groups. And you may want to talk a little bit about that, because the expenditures are that's something that's not a normal expenditure.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that, Spencer, because I do want to make it clear. I have the, let me see the data point in here, because I didn't want anybody to think that that much money was being paid out by OCCA using, you know, any city dollars or any donor dollars. Let me see. Oh, here, it's on page 4 in the recover box. At the last sentence, it mentions $160,000 in support for 12 local arts nonprofit. Those dollars came specifically from the ARPA money. So it came from that source. We basically acted as a fiscal sponsor, helped disseminate those dollars, helped collect all those grant applications, disperse the monies, and then are responsible for tying up and finalizing the reports when their time period is, like, usually at the end of a year. So that's, that is very unusual. I see a little bit more of it ahead. This is just a guess, so I may be wrong, but I'm seeing maybe 6 more months of that type of rescue dollars coming forward. There's some from Business Oregon that may be coming, and I'm not sure beyond that if how much more we'll see, but we'll gladly go for any of it that we're eligible for and make sure that smaller and local solo artists, for example, or smaller nonprofits also know about it if they're eligible. That's something that we can do as an arts council, is support the whole arts economy here in the area. And I know that there's a page in here, I won't go into the nitty-gritty, but just to highlight that arts and economic prosperity study we'll be doing for the next year. I think it'll provide some really interesting data for all of us, particularly for the city, to find out. We haven't done it in 5 years, but it'll help tell us specifically in our area how much the arts and culture contribute. Both the businesses, the arts and culture organizations themselves, and then how much the audiences that attend those organizations bring to the community from kind of a tourism and local local economic support perspective. So that'll be a year from now. I'll give you the highlights when we get them. So,
Ryan?
Dietmar wanted me to ask you about better funding for more public art.
He wanted to ask me about what?
He wants to advocate for more public art.
More public art. Oh, okay.
Always advocating. As a matter of fact, I've already advocated Spencer for some more money.
I, of course, support more public art. I think you have a great public arts committee that helps.
Just to say that you came in during a challenging time is an understatement, and you've done very well to keep the boat afloat. And I think some of the things that you've done, the art bus, I know that Cynthia and Dietmar and I were there that day, and
yep.
All I can tell you is we were just totally blown away. It was a great day. And then the fact that you did court is, you know, I don't think anybody would have ever thought we would have a court session at the Performing Arts Center.
It wasn't my idea, but whoever it was great. I just know, you know, I'll tell you this. It was one of the first things I saw when I walked in the door was the theater set up as a courtroom. And I thought, this is great because these buildings should be useful to the community if they can't serve their other function for, you know, dramatic reasons like a pandemic. Great, then they might as well serve the public in another way, and that's what you guys figured out. Somebody figured it out, so.
And then you did the drive-up movie, which I thought was just so cool because that's just at the perfect location. You got the parking lot there, the big screen. You can't miss. I just think you've done a wonderful job keeping the boat afloat, and we really appreciate it. David, did you have a comment?
Yeah, just, Jason, before you got here, about 4 or 5 years ago, there actually was another court proceeding. The Oregon Supreme Court held oral arguments.
Really?
In the main performing facility, and it was a big crowd. So it has been used not for an actual trial, but actually for oral argument at the Supreme Court.
Very interesting.
The one thing that, Jan, did you have a comment?
Yeah, you can finish what you're saying.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, and I just wanted to say we've been doing some work together, the Neighborhood Association with Jason and the PAC, and in fact we're having our first in-person meeting ever since we actually became an association. We'll be at the PAC, so having that facility open and of use to the community in other ways, and I think you've done a terrific job of reaching out, and just the kinds of things that there's collaboration going on. I hope that should. We've established something, and I think with the arts organizations and the being able to work together collaboratively with other arts organizations is powerful. Powerful.
They give you donuts, Jen.
What?
They give you donuts.
No, I don't think they're going to give me donuts. Do I get, you got any donuts?
Dietmar, don't. Get me in trouble.
They'll let me play.
They haven't even had their first meeting yet.
Loud.
And lastly, I got to solicit your help.
Okay.
I've been working on this for a while. Every time they put on their Facebook page that they're going to be playing someplace, I always say, you got to come to the Newport Performing Arts Center. Come back. and that's Pink Martini.
Oh, I was hoping you would say Thomas Lauderdale. Okay.
It's kind of funny because whenever I put a comment on there, somebody from Newport will put a comment. Yeah. So they've been here before.
I'm a big fan.
Yep.
I gotta find some dollars under some cushions to get them over here. But I'm a big fan. I'd love to make it happen. So anyway, we'll put our heads together. We'll figure it out.
Okay. Thank you for your report.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's take a 10-minute break.
Thanks. Sorry for
thanks, Jason.
Downgrading your appearance on the agenda, but it was for a good cause, I promise.
Okay.